We'll start there. Welcome to the six-ish episode of the Supercarcast. We are coming to you once again remote via Anchor Recording, which is one of our methods of recording. I'm Oliver, one of your hosts. Join me, as always, Nick, Drew, and Andre. You guys want to say hi?
Good evening,
Hello.
everyone.
Hey, all at once. Good timing. Man, we've had a lot of bad luck with like missing episodes, so I just don't know what people know anymore, but we do have a lot to go over this time around. I'm happy to start with the M3 project updates.
Lead off, man.
Geez, where do I start? Actually, it's so much that I don't even know where to begin.
Start with
It runs and
the
drives.
work you've done, like the work, like I guess go back to like what were the problems, just to kind of recap and then work from there.
Let's recap. So, I bought this car and just the suspension was all worn out. A lot of it was, like probably original to the car. The steering rack was blown. So I rebuilt the whole front end, ZHP steering rack, new tie rods, control arms, bushings, all that good stuff. The usual 25-year-old car refresh. And then I also, added like big brakes, so I did 996 Brembos and all that good stuff. So I had the car like all back together, right? That kind of catches you up to current day, but my eyeball alignment was not so hot. I think we mentioned in last episode. It just like the car wouldn't self-steer, like coming out of a deep lock, and I don't know, it just wasn't good. So I had to go get an alignment. That was good. I got the alignment done. I also took it over to a fab shop. So that was kind of an interesting experience, but it's a good thing I did because for those not familiar with the E36 platform, there's a serious issue with the trailing arms. So they have like these pockets which the trailing arms tuck into, and they're like welded nutserts, for the bolts and everything like that. And BMW, for whatever reason, just kind of has a history of not making great sheet metal in their cars where things attach, and they're known to tear themselves out. Sure enough, my floor was ripping apart pretty rapidly, and we caught it just in time. Like all the metal was still connected, like they hadn't come completely loose, but you could see all the like tears and everything like that. So, and some plates welded to my floor to reinforce all that, which is, great because a clunking I had from the rear end is now gone, which means that was my floor clunking around,
Oh, that's huge.
I mean, it's also kind of alarming because think how much I drove the car with just torn sheet metal,
Did a few miles,
and
a few
like,
hundred miles.
yeah, like 10,000 since I bought it.
Wow, damn.
So I mean, not an ideal situation, but it's fixed now, and that's good news. I did new subframe bushings while like they were tearing all that apart, so that's all solid. So the car feels a lot
So you
better,
feel a
right?
difference? Oh yeah, you just said, yeah, never mind.
Well, I mean, it's like not clunking and stuff. So I was going to get to that. That's sort of my list of woes, and I don't know, I'll get your guys' input on it. But to sort of cap off like all of the crap that I did, so on top of getting this plates welded in and the subframe bushings, I also got the car retinted finally. You guys have all seen the car in person. The tint that it came with was not good. It was bubbly, it was old, it was crappy. So I had all of that ripped out, and I put like ceramic tint, but I got like the clearest tints possible. So it's 70%, I think. So it's total fishbowl spec. Like you can't even tell it's tinted, but since it's ceramic tint, I was driving around a little bit this afternoon, and like the sun comes barreling into the car, but you don't feel the heat, which is kind of weird.
Yeah, that's
So
awesome.
yeah, I mean, it looks a lot better.
Yeah, I had a question.
Here's the thing.
That whole
Yeah,
subframe
go for it.
issue, that was same on the same with like E46s as well, right?
Not quite. So it wasn't the subframe ripping out, it was the trailing arms. The subframes on the E36 are actually, at least specifically M3 chassis, or reinforced non-Ms, if you like track a non-M chassis, they would have the same subframe issue, but the Ms were actually
Gotcha.
reinforced. So this is just the trailing arm reinforce or like mounting point. So it's like all the way on the outer edge of the car. Yeah, he had my subframe out of the car, and I asked him like, "Hey, take a look just anyways. I know it's reinforced from the factory, and there was zero signs of any cracking or any wear or anything like that." So it's less of an issue on the E36 M3 as it is on the
That's
E46
crazy.
M3.
Adding,
Yeah, I mean, the problem just shifted
was going to
inboard.
say, adding to my BMW flashcard list here to get this straight, E36 trailing arm issues, E46 just subframe issues. Got it.
Right, correct. Yeah, the E46 one is also a lot worse than the E36 one, because if the E46 subframe like completely tears out, your shell is virtually totaled. I mean, you can fix it, but it's pretty difficult. Whereas the E36, if your trailing arms do completely fail, it's kind of a pain to fix, but a lot of it's not the worst thing in the world. Like I know people who've had like complete failure of the floor there, and they were able to fix it and get everything all done. So it's totally manageable. It's just not an ideal or safe thing. So the other thing too is like if it fails completely, your wheel like just kind of goes a crazy direction, and with my fitment in the rear, that would send my wheel into my quarter panel. So I might have ended up with a rocket bunny kit had that failed all the way. It kind of leads me though to like, so I did all this work, and I don't know, I'll let you guys sound off. I've been complaining to, I think, all of you individually. The car looks great. It feels better in terms of like no more clunking, and like, overall it feels tighter, but it handles like
Really?
crap. Like the car, it's an M3. It's like, before I did all of this, the rear end felt pretty planted, but the front pushed and was kind of washy. Now that we've done this, the front feels pretty sharp, but the rear end just feels like garbage, and that makes the whole car like it doesn't really rotate right. It feels kind of
You checked out
numb.
your sway bar inlays in the front? No.
Those are brand new. I just put them in. Yeah, so those
Did
are
you
good.
replace your sway bar?
Nope, factory sway bar. Yeah, it doesn't really need sway bars. I might go to like an adjustable end link or something like that in the future if I need to fine tune it more. Here's what I think, and you guys can tell me if I'm wrong. I think it's probably a combination of my dampening, my ride height, and my tires. I'm definitely way lower than ideal. Like the car, it's not slammed exactly, but we probably took it past the point of like efficiency for those coilovers. I used to have Bridgestone RE71Rs, which are like baller tires, and now I'm on a Hankook Ventus, which is like a sport tire, but obviously not as grippy. Also, I didn't check my air pressure, so that might have something to do with it now that I think about it out loud. And then on top of that, I haven't fussed with the dampening that much, so I don't know. I'm open to suggestions, but like the ultimate driving machine is not.
So what I would say kind of right off the bat a little bit, I kind of touch base with you. You have more rigidity up front, a little bit more bracing and planting there. It is for at least dampening and reverb as far as the suspension give is. It is way low for that capacity. So you will lose some performance there. You bring up tire pressure just now, which is a great call. If you have too high of tire pressure in the rear, you're going to go ahead and start getting that basically wash out in the rear. It's going to try to over rotate that a little bit too much there for you. And then ultimately on dampening, it depends on what your ultimate goal. If you want a more balanced 50-50, or do you want like a tight and a little bit over rotation of the rear end? In that case, you do a little bit stiffer front, softer rear. But I think you could adjust all of those pivot points a moment and get real close to 50-50 without having to do anything really dramatic. And you might even be able to skip ride height adjustment a little bit and just work with like tire pressure. And you are definitely on a less sticky tire, but at the same time, we were driving on roads that were like not as hot. So like, I'm wondering if it was like just that combination had the right tire heat for the compound and you were really getting that grip coming into it. But I really think dampening could play a big factor into this.
Yeah. And that's really what I want to play with the most. I mean, that was sort of my leading suspicion going to, I'd really like the car to feel neutral overall. You know, cause I'm not drifting it or anything like that. It's 90% of a street car. Right. But like right now it just feels like the rear is like almost under rotating, you know, like it can't keep up with the front of the car. That's kind of the feeling I'm getting right now. And I don't know, BMWs are weird kind of in their own right, because as you lower them, they naturally camber in the rear. And even with an alignment, it doesn't really counteract that because there's not a lot of camber adjustment in the rear. So I don't know, maybe it's that's another factor and it's like over cambered or something like that. But I don't know. That's my biggest gripe right now. So I'm trying to figure out what's going on there. Otherwise, I'm happy. Like, car's going along, but just not quite as sharp as I want. Oh, that, and it's still leaking oil. And I think where I figured that out. So. Everywhere. So you guys remember last year I had a Miata, and Nick will remember this vividly. I went to a single drift day, and the Miata puked its guts all over the track. Not from like critical failure, but it was like pushing oil past all the seals. And I had just redone like the oil pan gasket and the what was it? The valve cover gasket. Valve cover and all
gasket,
that.
Timing belt, water front main pump, all of it.
Yeah, so I just had redone everything, so it didn't make sense why it was leaking. And it turns out the PCV valve failed on the valve cover. And so it was building so much crank pressure or crankcase pressure that it was like forcing oil past all of the seals because there was just so much pressure in the block. It turns out, I believe, that the M3 is doing the exact same thing, almost to a T. So like, if you putt around town, it doesn't like leak any oil, it doesn't cause like any trouble. But like the second you get up to high RPMs and you sustain it, it starts building all that case pressure. And it's just like vomiting oil once you do that. So I ordered the parts to hopefully fix that. But I mean, I definitely need to put a new oil pan gasket on. But as it turns out, that might have been a symptom of another issue.
Oddly enough, I think that's why part of the reason why the Land Rover was puking oil from its valve cover gaskets. And yeah, same thing.
That's same thing. Like, yeah.
The PCV valve was basically just clogged. It was a clogged 2-inch pipe. Mm-hmm. And so yeah, yep. Ever since I replaced that too, I haven't had a check engine light.
Yeah, that's, I mean, that'll help for sure too.
2001 Land Rover Discovery.
Did it burn out or is it? Sorry.
Yeah, you might want to check the bulb. I feel like, I don't know, years of being into cars and like that's never really been a thing that I check or worry about. And then recently, just like the last couple of years, it's been consistently across like a few different cars an issue for me. And then I'm hearing about it more and more. It must be a coincidence, obviously, but it's just kind of funny how that's worked out. Like, two cars back to back, same issue, same idiot me, not learning my lesson.
You always I guess you haven't had newer cars, but I mean, both those cars are the same.
I literally bought a brand new car off the lot. Before that,
though, you had a couple examples, real examples. But I guess you never ran into that issue with those.
Yeah, I never had like crankcase pressure issues, but I guess then again, I wasn't really trying to drive them that hard, so you know, maybe it was clogged, and just because I was putting around town, it never got to the point where I was just blowing chalked out it up seals. To a
300,000 mile E30.
Yeah, I mean, the E30 never leaked oil.
Yeah, no, the E30 was solid. Yeah. For that.
That E30 was a miracle car. M20s are known for a whole host of issues, and that thing had all the mileage in the world, and it never had leaking problems, overheating problems, ticking issues. Like, it was just bulletproof. I wish I kept just that engine out of it, because that was a miracle.
It drove, all the way to Denver without a dipstick, having ran in a bit, and didn't cause him any issues whatsoever. Like, that M20, I still to this day don't understand, like, the magic that was inside that specific car.
Right, just that one E30, for whatever reason, was just the biggest trooper in the world. But yeah, like my other cars, you know, my TI didn't leak either. It was just rusty, so it couldn't leak through the rust. So that's kind of my update. I don't know. I'm hoping before the next podcast, I'll fix all the PCV stuff, and then I'm gonna take like a day off work and just go to like Tortilla, or I don't know, maybe up towards like Yarnell or something, and just spend a day going up and down the road, like fine tuning the shocks and figuring out like why the car is handling as poorly as it is.
I did that with S2000.
Yeah, so that's
like, once you start playing with it, you can dial it in pretty quick.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and I've asked Nick too, since Nick has, you know, track experience. I was like, look, when you can, I'm going to throw you the keys, and like, please tell me what you think is going on, because like, I have my own idea, but the problem is like, it's based off of a lot more limited experience. So like, I feel like you know chassis dynamics a little bit better.
Appreciate that. I'm more than happy to go ahead and give it a go when the time's right.
Yeah, I'm more than happy to thrash your car around. Sure.
Yeah, if you need a second pair of hands on that, let me know. Andre, you need to get in on this BMW tech.
Yeah.
I'm going to need you guys to submit a full resume of your track experience.
Just let us run a train on your car. It's fine.
All right. I should be fine, because if you blow up the S52, what, worst case scenario? Oh no, I have to put an S54 in it.
You gotta wear a conductor's hat.
I don't know, we'll see. I have a really strong feeling like in the next year you guys will see me like find lighter wheels with like less offset, so I can run a fatter tire.
What about lighter tires?
That's true, man. Unsprung weight is a big deal. Andre makes fun of me for that, but I feel like that was really
unsprung
valid.
Unsprung weight on wheel rotational weight is absolutely the biggest improvement, like, when you're making.
Mm-hmm. Because, like, I did a whole, like, this is super nerdy, boring stuff, but, I mean, I guess this is the venue to talk about it. I did, like, a whole analysis on these 1552 wheels versus the stock wheels I was running. And I took the weight of the stock wheels versus the weight of the 1552 wheels. And then I looked up like the tire size that I wanted to run on the 1552 wheels. And I found a tire that would make it an equal weight to the stock wheel and tire package, because these are heavier wheels, right? So I found a tire that was like a full pound and a quarter lighter than any other tire on the market. It was a Continental. And I was like, dude, it'll match. It was like a couple ounces difference. I'm like, that means the weight will be the same and I won't be taking a huge penalty. Andre gave me so much shit about it.
I respect that. I respect it.
And then I ended up going with a Hankook, which was heavier anyway. So it was more a function of the Continental was absurdly expensive. So it wasn't necessarily worth it for now, but I did do the math. So, all right. Well, other updates. I'm done rambling. I've taken up enough of this. I feel like I've been doing all the talking.
Drew, you've got a ton.
We can start with just today.
Wait, before we get to what you've purchased, can we talk about what you already own?
I don't know. I'm just gonna go in order. So today,
okay.
I've had a couple cracks in the windshield in my Land Rover Discovery 2 from various things. And it's kind of cool. Like, you just park the car in the middle of your driveway, you leave the keys in the on the driver's seat. They will open up the car.
Wait, who's they? You left out a big chunk.
Company, which I am not going to name yet. Yeah.
Okay.
But, you know, yeah. But I'll just say it's Safe Flight, and they're pretty not great right now.
I was gonna say they're pretty global. Yeah. I don't think they're gonna be suing you or giving you crap on Instagram.
I've never used them before, but I was like, you know, this is the preferred vendor for my insurance company. You know, it's probably gonna be decent. They're not. They ended up somehow cracking my dashboard in half, like straight up. Pulled the whole front of my headliner down. Broke one of the tabs on my rain gutter, and then put the corners of my rain gutters inside out, or not inside out, but like in front of the trim and not behind the trim, how it's supposed to be. Pretty simple. I'm like pretty livid about the dashboard though. Like I'm really upset about that because it was never cracked, never had any damage to it. And, like literally separated and then didn't put any screws in there and then left black glue all over the white paint. So, yeah.
So Safely ran a train on your Discovery.
It was a train station.
Safely is trash.
They were wearing a conductor's hat.
Yeah. It's funny because like we were talking about this prior to starting recording. I've always, you know, heard negative things about Safely, but you hadn't heard anything prior, right? Yeah. It's interesting because you sent these photos. I'm looking like it's such obvious stuff that like the guy doing this must have taken a step back and was like, nailed it. My headliner
has some saggy spots, but it's been perfect up front. Like, I would re-glue that. It's sagging down like 3 inches. Like, are you kidding me? That I can't stand that stuff. And you can't really tell in the pictures, but between the black and the tan trim, I mean, it's blatantly separated. It's so bad. And you can see it inside the car, too. And, like, little things like that. Like, I mean, don't get me wrong. It's 2001 disco. Like, I let a lot of stuff slide, but, like, this is bad.
It's a shitbox, exactly. But it's your shitbox, and that's what matters. And he ruined your shitbox, and so they got to own up to that.
So, I don't know. We'll see what happens there. Then, also today, I drove round trip 300 miles to buy a... to become American, basically. I bought my first truck, guys. I did.
You bought a tiny Ford Ranger, right?
With,
yep, all right. So what was, like...
Okay.
I have a lot of questions.
Riddled with questions.
Riddle me this.
So what was... I understand that it was cheap, but, like, were you looking for Ford Rangers specifically, or just, like, whatever was... cheapest, like what led you to this acquisition specifically? What was your search criteria?
$35,000 to $5,000 range, and have found nothing but salvage title or 400,000 miles or completely beat to trash, like, or all of the above, for, you know, or in a wreck, or, you know, no paint, that we can go wrong with or go on forever about how bad all these other trucks were. And this guy was pretty straightforward, and it was $1,500, and it runs and drives great, and it's gonna be a little work truck anyways. So I'm pretty happy with it, because if you asked me last night, like, how's the truck search going, I'm like, I'm gonna have to pull more money out of savings, which I didn't want to do. So,
So I mean. It looks from the photo singular like it's you sent us. Shape. It looks to be in okay crazy. Shape.
It's missing one corner light, and that's it. And like $30 light, runs great. Cold AC, manual. Has a camper on it. It has the jump seats in the back for children, which I'm not gonna put my children back there. But
no.
But as I said, it's gonna be a work truck, and could be happier with it. So.
Go ahead, Andre. You were saying something.
Are you just making that noise should. Towards children? Okay. Children.
No, the jumper seats are a problem, but the 912 isn't.
He does. He that has a
very
point.
Valid argument.
Yeah, but one's a Porsche.
One's a Volkswagen.
One is more Instagram friendly. Okay, so here's my follow-up question. Now understanding sort of your search criteria and everything, this was the main thing that stuck out to me when you bought the when you posted that not 30 minutes ago. You, out of everyone in this group and possibly anyone that I know, needs something that can tow reliably given the sheer volume of cars you buy. If you're buying a truck, I understand like the budget and everything, but like why didn't you opt for something like F-150, Silverado. Oh,
trust me.
Something that can tow.
I'm right there with you. And so the game plan is to use for the next 3 to 4 months. I'm starting a company, and me and my partner were trying to do it as cheaply as possible. And basically, the next thing will be buying a Silverado or F-150. Yeah. Exactly.
All right, gotcha. So it's sort of a stepping stone. Because I was thinking about it, I was like, I feel like once a week you purchase something that doesn't run.
We're actually on four cars and four.
And like the Discovery can tow, but right. So my point stands. Like out of all the trucks that you can get, you got the one that like serves your other purposes the least. You know. I guess you could try towing with the Ranger, but I don't think it would go well.
Sorted. I can tow with that, and that will get me through the next couple months, I would say. You know, if I have to tow anything, which, knock on wood, I won't. But, you know, so, yeah. It's temporary, for sure.
You will.
And it gets good gas mileage, and it's going to be a little service truck, so it fits our needs. Yeah.
Sure. Yeah. No. Totally. I mean, it seems to be in good shape. I wish you sent more photos, but the topper is a pretty good score too. If you don't need it, you can sell that.
Everybody listening, we're not listening to our podcast. I'm starting.
Even Josh doesn't listen anymore.
Service and repair company with one of my friends who got laid off during this whole fiasco. And he was in banking before that, and we're both kind of looking for a move, and I'm doing the website and kind of more of the marketing aspect of it. So this fit perfect in our budget, and it's going to run all around the valley. So if you need our pool service, 20% off if you mention this podcast.
oh boy. Boy, does he understand right now your marketing genius, your partner? Score.
Yep.
So
last week it was
all right. So you picked up a truck.
Go ahead.
Let's talk about. I was gonna say. Well, let's talk about the 14,000 BMWs that you've gone through.
A good friend of mine. Well, it was my father-in-law's best friend. He ended up passing away, and his wife asked me to sell their BMW 325i. So that was meticulously maintained. Jim was actually a huge car guy, super cool guy that got me into Formula One. We'd go over there on Memorial Day, and we would watch the Indy 500 and Monaco every year. And it just so much fun. Can't speak highly enough of him. He had, I want to say, a 78 Camaro. And he gave that to his daughter. Super cool car, 28,000 miles, 1 of 3 made from the factory. You know, all the American car types, like this specific engine with this specific like transmission. It was built for the drag strip, like from factory. Super cool car. And he bought it from the factory, you know, factory ordered, and kept it until the end. So, you know, it was cool to be a part of that. And I ended up selling it to my brother-in-law. And I was like, you know, I think this car is perfect for you. You guys know how Jim took care of stuff. And I know you have an older dying BMW Mini, or not BMW Mini, but Mini. Yeah. And that thing was seriously dying. It is. I worked it out between them, and they agreed on a price, and everybody's happy. Jim's wife is happy, and my brother-in-law is happy, and it's a cool little car. And then before that, I had two ZHPs.
That's the one that I was more thinking of. Because you went through like all the ZHPs in the valley, and no one got suspicious.
Yeah, nobody. Well, we'll work that from the farthest. I sold my ZHP, and that was actually kind of a disappointment because the kid drove up from Tucson. He's like, "Hey, man, can you meet me at a BMW like service facility?" I'm like, "Yeah, sure, absolutely, man." Like, I feel really confident about this car. Like, I've been driving it. It doesn't have any check engine lights. Like, I've done all the service. I've replaced any of the parts that need to be replaced. Like, I felt really good about it. And so, you know, we get there. He's like, "Hey, I'm here for the inspection." And they're like, "Okay, cool. Like, you can pick it up at 5. I'm like, "Yeah, cool." Like, my boss followed me. So, you know, you can have them inspect it. And then, you know, we can work it out afterwards. And he's like, "Well, you know, I already drove the car. The car feels absolutely amazing. Like, feels really tight. And, you know, like, there's a couple little issues, like, cosmetically, but, you know, nothing big." And I'm like, "Yeah, sure." So he's like, "I feel really good about it. Like, forget the inspection. I'm just going to, I don't want to wait around here till 5. Mind you, it was 11 a.m. at this point. And I'm like, "Oh, all right, man. Like, it's your choice." So we do the deal. He drives it down to Tucson. And the next day, he's like, "What the heck, man?" I'm like, "What's up, man?" And he's like, "I just had a post-purchase inspection, and the bill's like $4,500. I'm like, "Well, yeah." I'm like, "It's a BMW. Like, let me send over what they sent over." And they're like, "You know, $600 labor for rear diff bushings, $400 labor for brake fluid drain and fill, $400 for power steering pump drain and refill, like all these things. And front tie rod, $400. Like, I'm like, "Dude, a lot of this stuff is like just general maintenance stuff. And like, I'm sorry, but like I said, the car ran really well. Mm-hmm. Like, it's good. Like, I didn't say like, you know what I mean? Like, I didn't say every little fluid has been changed. I'm like, I changed the oil.
Yeah, I mean,
I replaced the clutch."
Right. Those are pretty big, pretty big items. I don't know. I feel like that's one of those, like, the second you get a post-purchase inspection, like, sorry, too late, post-purchase. Like, you don't bother texting the previous person. That was on you for not doing your diligence, right?
You can feel, well, he's like, "I expect you to do something about this." I'm like, "You can look at the going rate for a car with 87,000 miles in this condition. If it was in better condition, then I would have got, you know, $2,000 or $3,000 more, but we agreed on a price, and honestly, if you can't afford those things, then you shouldn't be driving a BMW unless you can work on it yourself." And that's the reality of it for anybody. Anybody listening right now, if you're going to buy a $5,000 BMW, don't buy it unless you can work on it yourself. Or you can pay somebody else to.
True.
Yeah.
Yeah. Or a combination of both, as I've been doing. I guess the bigger thing is, too, it's like those items, I don't know, Andre, feel free to chime in at any point, but I feel like they're not, like, tie rods and stuff like that, they're not difficult. If he's going to, like, a dealership, he doesn't necessarily need to go to a dealership to get them all done. But also, like, I don't know, I've never bought a single used car and not expected to find items like that, you know? Yeah. As long as the motor's okay and, like, it's shifting okay and I'm okay with, like, 90% of it, I kind of go into it knowing that. All the
things
that
car thing should. Yeah, I was super disappointed because it seemed really cool. And, you know, a couple cars I've sold in the past, like, you know, I sold an S2000 6-7 years ago, and the guy reached out to me like 2 days ago. It was actually really cool because I was in a horrible mood. I almost got choked up when I read it. It's totally stupid, but he was just talking about like how much fun him and his family has had in it, and how it's helped him have a closer relationship with his son. He's just so grateful every day. Like, he bought this car from me, and I was like, dude, that's pretty cool. So, you know, and I like it to go that way. And so it just, it goes so dark when, you know, buying a car should be, I mean, it's always a big moment in most people's lives, and it should be fun and exciting. So, yeah.
Yeah, well, it's just, it comes with the territory, you know. Some people are
so then I bought another BHP. About it, but,
you so I
yeah.
So well, the first time. So what? So you went through a couple. I guess we don't really need the specifics on each one, nice but like you've tore through the market.
Unless there's another nice one. But
are you done with ZHP?
I found. Yeah, I found, the second one was a good one. Sold it to somebody that had been looking for a long time who'd reach out on the first one. I was like, cool. And then my neighbor completely fell in love with the second one I bought. It was black, and it was a four-door auto, and he wanted an auto. He's like, dude, I love that car. I'm like, dude, I literally just got deposit. It was at my house for like 12 hours. And so then I found the silver one. And then he ended up buying that, and he's just so excited. So he was looking at 335i's. I was like, you know, that's a ticking time bomb, man. Like, even for me, like, I personally wouldn't feel comfortable owning a 335i. And I'm not going to say fairly confident. I can get a round, but we'll say that.
No, because the M54 is a trash motor, and this I learned. Yep, I will say it. I know my flashcards. I've been learning that it's a trash motor. Their trash motor is just garbage. Just shit. Yeah. Okay, I'm done. Continue.
Yep. I was going to say, if ever there were a time for Andre, if you want to chime in, now's your time.
Yeah.
That's pretty well.
Yeah, so he bought it. He absolutely loves it. I love that car too. I was so surprised how well the sedans felt, how tight they feel compared to the coupe. But Oliver has been preaching this one for a while. Yeah.
What, sedans? Yeah, sedans. I mean, I don't know. It depends on maybe the car, but with BMWs, almost universally, the sedans are better handlers. Like, they're more rigid chassis. Like, this is from, like, E30 through E90 for sure. Just the four doors, since that beefier C pillar for the doors, they're just way more rigid. So they're sharper cars. There's some wheelbase differences. I think once you get up to like the F80 stuff, I think that like the F80 versus the F82 or whatever. Andre, correct me. What was the M4? M4 is F82.
Yeah, F82.
Yeah. So like the F80 is like a full inch longer. Like, the sedans are just better. In general, you know, from a handling perspective. Now, you know, looks are subjective. I'll give you that. I prefer the looks, like, for the
E36. Always goes back to E36.
What's up, Andre?
Well, they also sedans also look not better.
Always. Not always, at all.
True. Always.
So, I don't know if we talked.
Oh boy! No, just, here we go.
We're just gonna. I think subjectively to you they look better, but I would, given the option to buy specific enthusiast vehicles in two doors, is the better option in my opinion. I don't need four seats. I don't need a back seat. I don't need a spot for kids or people.
Nick builds quarantine
mobiles. Neither do I, but
but it just looks better.
No.
All right, so getting back to it.
All right.
And I don't know if we discussed it last time, but I replaced the alternator on the 912 just to find out it wasn't wired to anything. So, no.
So that's so why it wasn't charging.
Well, yes. But was wrong. I thought that all 912s and 911s from factory came with an alternator, and the 912 actually came with a generator. And so I ordered a voltage regulator for that. It was the wrong one, and I have another one coming in the mail. So hopefully I'll be able to drive that again, but I'm not doing anything. So pretty much since I've owned it, it's been running solely off battery. So when we went to 4 till 4 and everything in the 912,
just all on the battery. So it's a good thing I haven't had a radio.
Dude, still one of my favorite moments, just like my spidey senses were tingling. I was following Drew. I think I've told you guys this story. I was following Drew and we parked somewhere. We went somewhere and then like we were about to leave. Like I turned on my car and we were like going completely different directions. But like I waited. Well, I think you had your son with you. You were like putting him into a seat and whatnot. And like I waited because you hadn't started the car. And I'm like, it's not going to start. And like I'm sitting there idling behind him, just kind of creepily staring. I'm like, it's not going to start. Like I could feel it in my gut. And he gets in, nothing happening. And like I pull up next to him. And he's crazy. Like, battery's so dead or something. I'm like, I knew it. And I just so happened to have my jumper pack. Yeah, I had my jumper pack with me. So I was able to give you a jump. But like, I don't know, it was just something in my gut that was like, nah, I better stick around.
What's even
like,
crazier?
Something's about to happen.
It's not even all my updates. I learned how to polish.
What else you got?
Buff Best 2000 with many questions asked to our resident detailer, Nick.
Hey there.
Yep.
Our chassis engineer/detailer, Nick.
Amazing. That's up for sale right now. And as soon as that sells, I should be able to purchase my dream car. So, pretty excited about that.
All right.
Yeah, I've had a couple
offers. You have listed the S2000 for sale, right?
I don't know. I'm giving it to the end of the weekend, and I might accept one of those. Yeah.
Nice. Yeah, I mean, like, the quicker you move it, probably the better. And also, given like, I remember you told me the ranges, like, given the offers that you're getting and given the current situation globally,
it'd be nice just to,
not, you know, the most unreasonable thing in the world.
Stress. So. That's honestly what I'm most excited about. And then also being able to park Laura's car in the garage. So that'd be pretty cool. Yeah. Oh my gosh. So hot.
I think that'll be a win too, especially with the summer coming up.
Just beats on you.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. All right. Well, there's Drew's roundup. That was an intense one. Oh, I wouldn't shock me at this point. I can see that. Andre, I know you got a couple things.
Do I?
So where should we start? Yeah, absolutely you do.
You bought something?
You bought something.
Go on.
For your
E39. Oh, that's fair. Well, God, I hate this car. So this pile of shit.
We're off to a great start.
Broke, and then I tore it all apart, and then found out that the block was bad. So then I found another engine and had some guy deliver it to me.
You're oversimplifying and cutting out all of the best parts translator. Of the story.
Oliver, would you like to step in?
Okay. Sure. All right, Andre. Tell us a little bit about the condition you found this engine in.
Oh, I guess. Yeah, that's right. So it was, this is,
that was pretty interesting to me.
So I don't know. It was some guy that you found, Oliver, through some other guy. So it was like a guy of a guy of a guy. And so I hit him up and he was like, yeah, I got this motor. I got out of my buddy's car. He wrecked it and I pulled it to put in my car, what, but it's the wrong motor for my car. I was like, cool. Can I come look at it? So he had an E38, a 7 series, but it was the motor was from a early 7 series, like an early E38, so it didn't have like the Vanos and all the stuff from like the later E38s. So I grab a borescope so I can look up in the cylinders to make sure that the block is good, and I get some wrenches to, or some sockets to take the spark plugs out. And I head over to this guy's house and get to his house and pull up, and like it's your super cool, typical. There's like six cars in various
what kind of cars?
States of disrepair in his yard. Mostly what all kind of BMWs, and then there was a Suburban and a Toyota. Like mid, mid '90s, clapped out. There was like a 2.7 series, a 5 series. He had a old 6 series, which is, I'm pretty sure, was part of the Earth. I'm not 100% sure, but it seemed like it was part of the Earth. So we get there, and like, so I texted the guy, "Hey, I'm on my way. GPS says 25 minutes." He says, thumbs up emoji. Cool. I get in my car. I drive over there. 25 minutes later, I text him, "Hey, I'm here." He walks out and goes, "Damn, I forgot you were coming." We're off to a solid start.
What part of town was this in, by chance?
I think the politically correct term is the hood. West side, definitely the west side, like the deep west side, like Glendale. So
all of Glendale, yep,
yeah, well,
all of Glendale. Just so we'll
walk through his
this podcast again.
That's all right. Glendale's not that great.
Some sacrifices have to be made.
So I walk through his weed farm of a garage onto his back porch where his whole family's just hanging out. I was like, hey, this is strange. And on his back porch in a bush, inside of a bush, was this engine.
What?
It was just...
Hold on. What?
It was... It had weeds growing through the manifolds. Like, it was part... It was one with the bush. And so I said, "Oh, cool. Okay, well, how long have you had this?" And he said, "It's been sitting here for about 2 years." So, this is about as good as this can get at this point. So I take it all apart. I pull the spark plugs, look in all the holes. I found a wasp in one of the cylinders.
Ooh.
It was dead, but it was in there. So that's cool. But it turned over freely and it didn't have any damage. So I said, cool, I'll buy it. And then I turned around and looked to see how to get it out. And aside from it being in a bush, there was also a trailer with like 3 flat tires, which was behind a gate, which was just bricks, which was behind a truck, which was on blocks, which also didn't have a motor that was running. And I was like, okay, well, how about you dig this out and then I'll come back later. But he ended up moving all this stuff and delivering it for me. So that was nice of him. Really cool guy.
It's a win.
Yeah.
Yeah, he seemed like a nice guy from the friend of a friend who described him. So
yeah, no, he was a super, super cool guy. He brought it over in his ratty little Toyota truck with a super cool engine. It was all like shiny and brand new, and that was cool.
Yeah, you said it was like a clapped out truck with like a built engine or something like that.
Yeah, like the truck looked like my hard body that I used to have. Like, he was just completely tore up. But then he popped the hood to adjust the carb before he left, and it was like brand new, like all chrome, like dual carb. Like, it was,
that's rad.
It was pretty baller. Yeah.
Nice.
So
now, the long and short of it is, you now have an engine. Well, a block.
Well, yeah. Now I have a block and one dead wasp and a whole bunch of grease and grime in my garage.
Yeah. How's the cleanup going on that thing?
I took it all apart And then I threw all my clothes away because they were covered in two-year-old bush oil grime. Thanks. But it's now a bare block, so now I had to rebuild it.
But it's going to be usable, right?
I think so. I mean...
Nice. Because I think that was the biggest... I don't know if we touched on this last episode. I think we did. The biggest point of contention was we weren't sure if a non-Vanos M62 was going to work for your car. And as it turns out, you looked it up, they have the same part number, so the block is interchangeable.
Yeah, the block was the same block for the entire run of that... for the entire run of the E38, E39s.
Which is a huge win.
Yeah, I just have to transfer over a couple like things from the old one, like little fasteners or little bobs and bits, but I mean, whatever. I have all that, obviously. Yeah. So I just have to... Now I just have to actually do it.
Nice. And so what's our timeline like on that?
Never.
I don't like that attitude. Someone help me out here. Someone back me up.
I feel like you can crank it out because of like how knowledgeable you are, plus having everything. Like if there's anybody that can put that block together fast, it would be you.
It's not that I can't. It's just like I don't really want to.
But then it can run and drive and move and make it easier to get the Lexus in and out.
I just want it to...
Give me $1,500 and I can make that happen.
Never.
All right, well.
And never see it again. You know, at this point, that's almost worth it.
Yeah, so this project has not gone well.
No.
I guess on a more positive note, you've been on a mini shopping spree for your favorite car.
I don't even know if that's a positive note either.
Hold on. What's going on?
So I was...
Okay.
Oh, my God. So this fucking piece of shit Lexus that I have.
Okay, first off, you love that car.
It's reached hoopty status slowly but surely because, I mean, it is 25 years old and it's all worn out. The suspension's all... clapped out now, and like it's just old, so it needs some refreshing. So I've been like going on trying to find like replacement parts, but like slightly better parts, so it's not just like stock, just like slightly upgraded stuff. So I like try to get nice shocks or nice struts, and like I was gonna get lowering springs to like make it sit a little better, and like what else did I try to buy? I don't know, there's a couple other things that I made a list and I was like, yeah, I'm gonna go and buy this stuff. And so I spent all this time and research, and then I like physically went through the websites and clicked like order for struts, springs, some wheel spacers, some things. And like half the stuff doesn't exist anymore. But none of these websites say that it doesn't exist.
Was it back-ordered?
No, it's just out of production, does not exist. So
So you just can't have it.
Yeah, so I just can't have it. But like none of these websites say that. So like they let me go through ordering it and like, yeah, I did something cool. And then the next morning I get an email like,
that's the worst.
Hey,
that's
your order was canceled. Never mind. Yeah, so and like some of these things are like, hey, we don't, this doesn't exist anymore. So we had, and then the one that I ordered spacers. Like wheel spacers. And then the next morning, they just emailed me, here's a refund with no explanation.
Just what?
No explanation.
Which is crazy because it's just spacers.
Yeah, they just flat out refused to sell me spacers. I was like, okay, well, that was. So then,
Drew, hook him up with some 5x114 spacers. I know you got some sitting around. There we go. Problem solved.
So then after a bunch of bitching and griping, because I didn't want to do coilovers, because I don't want to ruin the ride quality of this car.
If you do.
Right, because all you drive...
if done improperly.
All you drive is already low sporty cars. It's...
Well, yeah,
I bet you coilovers would ruin that car.
Lowering springs.
So after a bunch of bitching and griping, Oliver convinced me. Oliver finally convinced me to order coilovers.
It took a lot, guys. I really
am impressed.
I was working overtime.
That is impressive.
I'm still not. Don't worry. I still haven't ordered anything, so this could all backfire still. So I went through and I hit up all like the your basic bitch coilover places that like do, you know, custom like built coilovers. And I was like, hey, I don't want to ruin this car. What do you suggest for like just like a slight drop but still a comfy ride? And I just didn't get a response from anybody. Yeah, right. They just refuse to answer me.
I wonder if this is a result, like all of this is a result of the pandemic, like the spacers not being able to be shipped to you and like the parts that like exist but don't exist. I wonder if just like these shops can't get to them or like the supply chain's so broken that they can't, and then like companies like, well, let's call them out for who they are. BC didn't respond to you. And like BC right now is raking in the cash because all these kids with their stimulus checks are just plopping them down on conveniently priced sets of $1,200 coilovers.
Yeah, ain't that the truth? But BC and Fortune Auto, they didn't respond to me either.
That's weird to me because Fortune was really good about like communicating with me when I had questions for them. So that's why I wonder if like it's just pandemic related, where like they're not answering because like they're otherwise unable to.
I mean, that's what I assume too, but it's just been like an annoying process of I can't get anything done. So
that's exciting though. Coilovers, man. So, that's a huge step. I'm pretty stoked for you, man.
I haven't bought anything yet, so don't be excited.
You know, if you're gonna do unfortunately, I would rather go used and spend $1,000 or $1,300 on very nice coilovers than spending $1,000 on Fortune Autos or something. They're going to ride like crap, dude. Don't do it.
Fortune is good quality.
Well, one, Fortune Autos do not.
Yeah,
you're right. Fortune Autos are shit. Nobody should ever buy those garbage-ass coilovers. Right, Oliver?
Wrong.
Yeah, what do you have to say to that, Oliver?
Anyway, here's the issue, Drew, on that one.
Nobody makes an LS400.
This is an LS400, not an S2000 or a BMW. There's like three options in the game, and like if you're going to get used coilovers, he's probably going to end up with used Megans. So
What about that answer entirely?
You're ruining static, like Lord Farquaad.
You're ruining that worked months on his of my work. Oh my god! I've been at this for months. You're gonna.
Dude, stop it! What?
Andre's very against these options, so he prefers if you don't bring them up.
I'm like. Two unanswered emails away from just buying OEM everything and just
did they make Olean's for that?
Scrapping the whole everything.
Olean's or Owens, however.
A what?
Is it Olean's?
They didn't make Olean? Anything.
Because like I always called them Olean's, and then somebody was like, "No, they're Olean's." Olean. Like,
right, but... I think it's Olean. It's Olean. I'm pretty sure. I mean, I don't know. I only talk to the guys at the Olin's booth at Pike's Peak. But
that's why people can listen to this podcast, because they learn stuff.
We're a definitive source for how to pronounce things. By the way,
style five.
If y'all, if you're all wondering,
sorry.
If we went specifically to the BBS booth to get clarification on style fives versus RC090s, as it turns out, they all style fives.
You're ruining people's lives right now.
It's a BBS fact.
It's confirmed. Oh my god! It was like a heated debate for months. We were at so this is a story worth telling.
This is great.
Myself and another individual, who will remain unnamed, we're very much arguing on whether or not the BBS RC090, which is a model number, which is a factory wheel that came on E39s actually. So Andre, you can relate. I think actually the pre-LCI, like 540s. So like it would have come on your car, like an older version of your car. They're like a two-piece, nice-looking mesh wheel. I had a set on my TI. I like them. But the thing is, like, it's a mesh BBS, so L5. Like, it's an OEM mesh BBS. It falls under that style 5 category, right? And, like, we were arguing back and forth, and it's like, oh, well, it's not a, you know, or it was, I think the argument was like, it's not a style five because it's an RC090. And I'm like, that's just a part number. It's a style five. And like, we went to the BBS booth at Bamerfest, whatever year that was. And like, I marched right up to the guy because I was so sick of the argument. It had been going on all day. I'm like, I have a quick question for you. And the guy, I think he was more confused than amused. He seemed really uncomfortable with the question. He's like,
yeah.
No, those are style fives. Thank you.
And just walk away.
That was it. I took a sticker. So.
Yep.
Yeah, see? So that's all you gotta do. Okay. All you gotta do is ask. Just go up to the booth and be like, how is this pronounced? And they'll tell you. It might be uncomfortable, but to get back to the point. Andre, did you decide what coilovers you're going with?
No.
No, as in, like, what are your options?
I mean, BC.
Does no one else make, like, did you look at any of the other brands? Fortunato makes them, right?
I mean, Fortunato makes them, BC, and then everything down from there.
It's Racelands, maybe?
Yeah, Racelands, your Godspeeds, your True Hearts.
How about 326 Power?
I guess they
definitely make them. I know Elvis ran them on his LS400.
I don't speak Japanese, so I can't.
I think they
order
have a UK
any,
distributor.
Nor do I want to spend
also,
that kind of money.
I think 326 is specifically focused at their like softest spring rate is 46K. And it gets stiffer from there.
Yeah. Yeah.
I don't think that's going to work for you very well. Okay. Well,
their tallest coilover is 2 inches.
it's about the same as welding a pipe into where your strut was. But this is colorful. This is colorful.
Yeah.
We'll give you a pink spring.
Right.
All right. Well, that's a pretty substantial update from last time. Like, the LS is getting a little bit of love. It might be a pain because of the pandemic and people not selling you stuff, but that's a pain. And there is progress on the E39 for better or worse. You got a block. Yeah, that's kind of huge, man.
It's all for worse.
Well, it's like...
Yeah, it's still so.
I just want to experience one full pull and then you can do whatever you want with it because I still haven't gotten that. And I
just
went
remember
with you to get
how
the car.
Good it looked when we did tortilla flats last time. Yeah, it sounds true. Really good.
It sounds good, too, because, like, that V8. Because, like, you know, we all joke, but LS is really good because, you know, it's all single cam, push rod. Like, they all sound the
Silverado
same.
Silverado motor?
And, like, this has a very distinct... Yeah, yeah, Silverado motor.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Iron block, good old 5.3.
One of those, America.
But the 540 had, like, a really, like, a distinct kind of, like, I don't even know what to... Like, a rumble. Mm-hmm. He's very bassy, you know. So I don't know. I like it. So I miss hearing it, and I can't wait until it's all up and going again. Nick, do you have any? I actually don't know if you have any project updates. Usually, I'm kind of in tune with these things beforehand, but like, I don't know what you've been up to.
Not a whole lot. It did fix the oil leaking out the front and the back of the motor.
That's a win.
So that was a win.
PCV valve?
Well, two things. The valve cover was removed when it went to tuning. So they had removed it to check cam. And on Miata valve cover gaskets, you need to put RTV in roughly 6 specific spots.
Mm-hmm.
It was pushing oil out there. And so that really strong oil smell that we've gotten the whole time, where I was like, oh man, my catch can is in the wrong location.
Mm-hmm.
Turns out, just me been spitting oil out the top of the trans the whole time. I just haven't paid attention because it hits the top of the trans and it goes away. And Swiss tracks, I never seen oil drip ever. So
oh man, I didn't even think about that. Yeah, your garage floor.
Yeah, so that's one thing I've learned about the garage floor. I love it because you don't see any mess, but also you don't see any mess. Put on a new valve cover gasket. Just because we were talking about PCV valves, I threw in just an OEM one that I picked up just mm-hmm. because I was like, I have one in for a turbo setup. It's fine. It checked okay, but I'm like, you know what? I'm just gonna go to a lower pressure OEM setup on it. If I dump more into the cash can for blow by, it's fine. So ran through there, tested it out by doing like 47 pulls in a row to see if it was going to build up enough pressure and leak. And so it didn't. So that's a super win. I did the AC on the car as well. So now the car has AC.
Nice.
I mean, it needs retuned because if you have AC on and you're coming to a stoplight, you will shut the car off. But I mean, tiny details.
That's a relatively easy fix because like 90% of the map is done, right?
Yeah, so it's just up kicking it from there. So I got to do that. I got to go back, repolish some stuff in the engine bay. Mm-hmm. I'm getting a lot of motor vibration, but I don't know if I have 500 miles on those competition mounts. So that will kick down roughly after that. Fuel rail likes to unscrew itself.
You must be past 500 miles because like all the dyno pulls.
Yeah, no, I mean they did 160 miles on the dyno.
Yeah, you got to be past that because you've been to Tortilla like a couple times. You went up to that show that you won at. Like you got to be past.
I definitely should be, but we'll see. I'm getting some vibration. I don't know if I need to do some, either just switch out the bolts that I have on the fuel rail. Mm-hmm. But there's a couple times where the bolts like to back out. So just on the to-do list is basically still the windows.
That was going to be a follow-up question. You still haven't done that?
Nope, still didn't touch the windows yet. And then I basically just need to get everything cleaned up, need to wash the car, because I've only washed the car once.
That's actually one more time than I've ever December? Washed the 912. January?
So, no, you've washed it in paint stripper many times.
But no, that's what you'll have come up here after the E36 does paint. Once you do like the ceramic coating to a certain level and the like clear bra, it just also it doesn't get out that much. It's a lot of times can get away with just a nice little waterless wash detail, and you get to keep out a lot of the micro scratches, which is good. But I'll get out there. I haven't been outside too much because allergies have been killing me. So I went and got that taken care of ish today. So hopefully I can start getting out back in the garage, come up here.
Nah, that'd be good. Because it's just starting to heat up. So just in time to really enjoy the hot weather.
Yeah, it's when I do. That's when I wired the car. I waited apparently until the middle of June to wire that car. So I guess it's just the approach. But yep, not too many updates here, but no more oil leak. It's running good. I do have to fix, I guess, the headlight. I had a little bit of something either that shifted or something came out. The carbon fiber shroud got scratched up pretty good. So if it's too far gone, I'm just going to have Rob make another set.
No, okay. Well, I guess at least he can make another set, right?
Not too, that you recently got definitely. Some wire wheels.
Yeah.
Oh, best yeah, Drew dropped ever. Off the Thank water wheel so back at the house. Some tools are progressively trickling back to the household.
If that was a subtle hint to bring back your Dremel, I'm well aware that I have it.
No, actually, it's not at all. I literally, it's clearly I'm not in the garage and I don't have anything to cut, nor do I want to have a use for the Dremel. So by all means, please continue to do whatever you need. Yeah. No, I'm good.
Weirdly enough, that Dremel like bailed me out on like three separate things. Like I borrowed, I forgot, what was the original reason I borrowed it for you?
Brakes, even... the little pin.
Oh yeah, so the brake pins. So I borrowed the Dremel for the brake pins, right? I used it for like three other things on the car that like just so happened to crop up. So like bailed me out three times. I got a lot of use out of that.
Hey, Dremels are awesome little tools to have.
I need like, to get one. Yeah. They're not even that expensive. I don't know why I haven't bought one. So like one of the things I have, because of the Porsche brakes that I have on the car, because I can't afford a Porsche, but I can afford Porsche brakes. Yeah. Well, they're 996 brakes. So, you know, not a cool 911 necessarily. I mean, it's cool, but not the coolest.
Some would disagree, but.
But I have those conversion brake lines.
Just being stupid. I'm sorry.
I like them. I'll put up. I have those conversion brake lines up front. They're like braided lines and everything. And you know how brake lines, like, they need to go somewhere. They can't just be flopping around. On the E36, there's like a rubber grommet for the brake line, and it's supposed to like slide onto the shock body. Like there's a like a little metal welded bracket onto it, and it sort of like slips on there. Well, I have aftermarket struts, right? The Fortunato coilovers. And then I have these aftermarket brake lines, and like it seems like the Fortunato bracket is a little bit smaller and the Rally Road brake line has a little bit bigger grommet, and like they straight up were incompatible. So I just took the grommet off and I like shaved the inside of it until it fit in the metal bracket, and it holds beautifully. But like it seriously bailed me out, because like otherwise my brake lines would just be flopping around, and like I was worried about them getting like ripped out or crushed or something like that.
So. Yeah, that'd be bad.
That wouldn't be a problem if you didn't have such garbage coilovers like Fortunato's.
Really good coilovers though. They're like the nicest coilovers I've ever owned. Like seriously nice. I mean,
KW. That's more giving Drew shit for saying that.
They're like return KWs. They're like,
Nick, back me up on this one. Like
Fortune.
All right.
I have never had a coilover with a shock body that threaded as nice as the Fortunato.
I was going to say, I'm like, talk about how threaded. Like, that was, most of the time, it's like, you have to, unless you could just literally spin and watch it go smooth up and not hang or catch.
Like, you know, whenever you adjust coilovers, like, you have to really, like, put all of your muscle into it and wrench them to, like, spin them up and down. Like, even if, I guess because
you know, like my
cut springs don't really allow for adjustability, but
V3s or you know my club twos I worked with, but no big deal. Settle.
It's just, but again, all of those I had KWs on my Fiesta ST. Like again, they were not.
Did you
as
actually have KWs on
my Fortunato? I stand
like
by
the,
that.
Like the real brand, so, or
yeah,
yeah.
It was the STs, which is the same body.
It's
so,
not. It's
thing.
Not the same thing because it's like different. It's not actually KW. It was actually KW, then it's KW.
But it is.
Not to be a complete a-hole here, but to be a complete a-hole.
All right, like, I'm just going to let that one slide.
And I was more talking crap because I thought Fortunatos were the rebranding KWs, and they're not. So, yeah, I have zero experience with them.
They're not.
Rubbish. I'm sorry.
No. They're actually, yeah, no, it's fine. The only reason I stand is like in the unlikely event someone happens to stumble across this podcast and hear, I don't want them to get the wrong idea. That's why I stand up for them, because like they seriously are a nice coilover, and they're all American made.
Are they actually,
for
like,
whatever that's worth these days, is kind of nice.
Wow, that's pretty impressive. I had no idea.
Yeah, everything.
Everything's built here, in they're in what Pennsylvania,
Georgia?
Right? I thought they were in Georgia. Yep. Then Andre corrected me the other day. I think they're in Pennsylvania. Yeah. So that's kind of nice. You know, it's all within the country. I so really it's very like patriotic.
There's definitely a quality difference, man, for sure.
Makeup.
Yeah. And I mean, like, I've had, I feel like I've kind of run the gambit. I have literally had Racelands on my car. And I've had K-Sports, ST/KW, Fortunato now. Like, I've run the gambit. And so far, these and obviously the KWs kind of been the top, with these kind of edging out the ST/KW brand. Personally, just given the applications I've experienced them in. But
if I could go with manufacturer right now, I think I'd actually go with Tane over KW. Just because... like everybody talked about how amazing the KW V3s were, and I had the CircuitMaster RAs on the S2000, and I had the Super Sports on my Prelude, and I've had various amount of springs and stuff like that, and their quality has been unbelievable the whole time. And everybody was like, "Oh man, you're gonna feel like this huge difference," and I was like, "I kind of actually like my CircuitMasters a little bit more," but I mean, that was an expensive coilover. That was like, you know, they were both high-end coil, or not, I wouldn't say high-end, Olin's, or, you know, or, gosh, was it not Motec, Mofric, or, I don't know, can't think of the name right now, but, you know, both $2,000 coilovers, you know, so they were awesome, but even CircuitMasters around 13, they're fantastic, so.
It's interesting too. We may have had this conversation, in which case stop me, but it's I think it also depends on the car, right? Like the S2000, it makes a lot of sense. The Tane,
even the Prelude makes, like, as well,
the better option. Whereas something like a Porsche, right? Yeah, but then like you get into like 911 territory or M3 or something like that, where like KW suddenly makes a lot of sense. And like I think it boils down to R&D, obviously. You know, because like Tane obviously is going to be, you know, they're going to have way more R&D time on a chassis like an S2000 or a Prelude than they would on, like, I mean, I don't even know if they make anything for BMWs, and if they would, I certainly wouldn't touch it. I've never heard anything about Tane on a, you know, BMW. Mm-hmm. But then, like, you move over to the Honda side of things, and it's like, well, Tane is it. Like, that's the best option. And same with, like, what, the Miata? That's what you're running, Nick, right?
Yep, I run the Monoflex.
Yeah, so it's like... yeah. I think on JDM cars, the JDM brand kind of goes hand in hand, not just because like they're both JDM, but like because they're physically closer to each other and the companies are probably a little bit more interconnected, it makes sense. Apparently that like their R&D is higher for those chassis.
2000 BMWs.
So are you saying
really anything after that?
Yeah. What was that, Andre?
So are you saying... are you saying that Fortunatos would be a perfect fit for my 1995 Buick Roadmaster? Yes.
Yep.
Hell yeah.
That's actually their primary development mule. That's what they test all their coilovers on. They'll change the geometry of the Roadmaster to match whatever they're testing. So in the case of my M3, they shorten the wheelbase by 30 feet and then throw a bunch of camber at it.
Andre, have you thought, does Tane make anything for that or no? Mm-hmm.
I don't know, but probably not.
He's an LS400. I was gonna say we have the power of the internet, so
yeah, there you go.
I am looking that up. Yeah, they do.
I don't know about the
they're flex all used C's, on eBay, but
Street Flex might be decent. You got this, man. You got this.
That might be a decent option for you, Andre.
I'm not talking about just I dailied all my cars, and like a good instance, good example is I had my CircuitMasters, and then I hopped into a buddy who had, it was like the mid-range Buddy Club coilovers. I'm like, I felt like I was being shaken to death. Over like a pebble in the road, where, you know, the my tanks are never like that. So
I was gonna to sort of compound that. If you know, I ever do lower the TSX someday, which reminder, I still own a TSX. I was gonna put Tain on it, not because like it's sporty, but because everyone says they ride like factory, but you can lower the car on them. So they kind of have a reputation for being more of a street friendly brand, I feel like.
And they were the first company that did the electronic dampening adjustment that you could do from inside the car.
Cool. So, oh my gosh, it was so cool.
Oh my god. Guys, Andre, I have the solution for you. I know exactly what you need. Did you ever see the video of the LS400 with the Bose suspension?
I have.
Where it would go like 40 miles an hour and suck up the wheels and go over a speed bump without touching the speed bump, but inside the cabin you didn't feel it.
What?
Have you never seen this?
Yeah, just let me... Yeah, it was like a video from the early 90s. Let me just find 30 grand for the...
Oh, no. Try a couple million. Suspension. Try a couple million. It was a one-off demo car that was never available.
Yeah.
That was all R&D. Yeah, Nick, look up...
Yeah, it was just a...
Look up Bose LS400 on YouTube sometime. It's called Bose Active Suspension. And they tested it specifically on a Lexus LS400. And it's the most hilarious thing, because they're putting around this parking lot.
They jump like a track and field hurdle, but like a little one.
I cannot like wait to see it. This sounds ridiculous.
They jump a hurdle in a whole ass car.
And the in-car footage,
it's fantastic.
I'll share it after this. Yeah. Like the in-car footage is mind-blowing too, because like they're going, you know, full speed at the speed bump. And it's like the speed bump never happens, because like it absorbs everything in real time. Oh my god!
Like you know that video of like the truck twerking its bed over the speed bumps. It's like that on the outside, but on the inside, it's like they're sitting in like a lazy boy. Like nothing's moving inside. It's amazing.
The other thing that it does, Andre, which you might love, is like because it actively like controls the body in real time, when you go around a corner, it keeps the car level, so there's no like lean to it. You sit perfectly vertically in your seat the entire time, because the suspension compensates for the lean.
That I think is worth the millions of dollars alone in that car, because those seats don't hold you for shit,
dude. If you ever win the lottery, like most people, I want to buy a Lambo, I'm going to buy a Ferrari, I'm going to get a big mansion. You're going to like go straight to Bose and be like, I want that prototype suspension.
Build me this now.
I think the reason it never came to market was it was so horrifically expensive and complicated. Like the car, it had no trunk because of all the systems and whatnot. And it was it was not practical. I wonder if they could do that nowadays, you know, because that was definitely developed in the 90s, right? But
yeah, I was going to say that video. I feel like it's a first gen LS, isn't it?
Yeah, it was.
So, like,
it was the block.
Yeah, so it was like early 90s.
And stuff like that in cars. Have they really progressed that much? Safety, absolutely. You're right.
Safety, dude.
Yes.
I mean,
they've progressed so far.
I mean, reliability alone, like new cars for the most part just work, right? Like, I mean, Hyundai has a reputation of like not being good in like the 80s and 90s, right? But like nowadays, Hyundai and Nissan, whatever, they're all about the same. Like, you expect them to work out of the box.
Aren't they going out of
business? Nissan still sucks.
True. But I think the biggest thing is safety. Like, safety has improved so exponentially over the years, even in like the last 10 years. Like,
safety and efficiency.
That too. Like, they're squeezing a lot of power and MPG out of, you know, these modern motors. So, like, it definitely has improved. It's not the same.
Yeah, like,
but you just don't get that raw feeling of that screaming four cylinder behind you as your paint flies off down the freeway. Oh. Anyway, as far as new cars go, there's a couple that I would buy right now, just because like I feel like the modern technology, as you know, complicated as it is, and probably as much of a pain as it is to work on for enthusiasts like us, like the cars just look so good. Like, I mean, Veloster N, I've talked about a lot. I mean, the suspension's a little alarming because it's all the MagRide, and I think that's Hyundai's first attempt at MagRide, so who knows how that's gonna hold up long term reliability wise. But I don't know, stuff like that, it just makes it so good to drive, you know.
I think I'd buy an S-Class if I could afford one.
Oh, yeah, for sure. Under warranty. Like, I don't want under warranty. Just any hyper-luxury car.
New, right? BMW, obviously. Like, M4, probably. Because they got kiddos. They're cool.
Well, the M4 is the old BMW now.
M3?
M3.
Sorry. I didn't have the flash cards in front of me.
Yep. I thought you had.
Yeah.
I'll ship over my set.
Yeah, you're gonna need to copy them for everyone.
A lot of them just don't have the same Zao, but
sure. They don't have that character as I've been told before. All my cars have character, which is code for please never pick me up in this again.
Be like, oh man. I'll be like, yeah.
Yeah, man, he's gonna look at like the 2020 Civic Type R and be like, man, they just don't make them like they used to.
Absolutely.
I love the new Civic Type R.
Land Rover Defender is so good. God, I love that thing.
As long as you get the base model with the Steelies,
save some money for all the repairs.
actually, I think the move with that Defender, I mean, I don't know how far off topic we're going here, but that that Defender, I think the move is to buy like the fully loaded one and then make the dealership swap the base model wheels on.
My wife, right?
I think that's how I would do it if I had the money.
It looks like a child's toy, but that's why I like it. That's oh, gross! Shit, she said a giant Mini Cooper, and that's what it looks like. Get out of here! You don't know cars. Unacceptable. So good.
I feel like it kind of looks like a Bronco in a way. Really, I don't know, I'm kind of getting like a Bronco vibe from it. Speaking of which, I mean, we can close out on this. I feel like this is a good place Bronco to close out on. Where the hell is the Bronco? The Ford Bronco, they've been teasing it for like 12 years now.
Same with the... Go ahead.
And they were supposed to... They released the photo of the off-road version at the race version at SEMA last year in November, and
now they ran it in Baja, and it did. Yeah, they ran that in Baja, and it did like pretty horribly, if I remember correctly. I think it didn't finish or something like that. I think it's running an EcoBoost motor, which is actually probably the main issue. All right. Well, I think that's probably our podcast for the evening. That was a very like coilover suspension heavy episode.
Just banter.
We spent the whole first part of the podcast talking about my M3 and the suspension system. All right. Well, let's close it out there. Thank you so much, everyone, for tuning in. We'll try to get these out more frequently, but obviously we've been fighting distance issues. I miss our studio. I miss recording these in person. This virtual thing is just not the same, but for those listening, thanks for listening. We appreciate it. Go ahead and give us a follow on Instagram if you haven't already. It's at SuperCarCast. Yeah,
thanks, guys.
Yeah, thanks for tuning in.
Thanks.
Yee.